I hope, like the song we just sung, you're happy today. This morning, though, we're going to look at some ways we deceive ourselves. If you're following along, you can turn to the book of Philippians, chapter 4. We're going to look at verses 11 and 12. Not that I speak for want, for I have learned to be content in whatever circumstances I am. I know how to get along with humble means, and I also know how to live in prosperity. In any and every circumstance, I have learned the secret of being filled and going hungry, both of having abundance and suffering need. In the children's book by Judas Vioris called Alexander and the Terrible, Horrible, No Good, Very Bad Day, the young boy in the story is having a bad day. He says, I went to sleep with gum in my mouth, and now there's gum in my hair. And when I got out of bed this morning, I tripped on the skateboard, and by mistake, I dropped my sweater in the sink while the water was running. And I could tell it was going to be a terrible, horrible, no good, very bad day. He goes on to tell about his day. There were lima beans for dinner, and I hate limas. There was kissing on TV, and I hated kissing. My bath was too hot. I got soap in my eyes. My marble went down the drain. And I had to wear my railroad train pajamas. And I hate my railroad train pajamas. When I went to bed, Nick took back the pillow he said I could keep. And the Mickey Mouse nightlight burned out. And I bit my tongue. The cat went to sleep with Anthony and not with me. It had been a horrible, terrible, no good, very bad day. Sounds like some of our days sometimes. If you notice, some of the things that happened to him were of his own making, like going to sleep with a gun and then waking up later with it in his hair. I imagine every one of us has a day, and once in a while, we would echo the words of the psalmist who said, I said, oh, that I had wings of a dove, I would fly away and be at rest. I would hurry to my place of shelter, far from the tempest and the storm. That's from Psalm 55, verses 6 through 8. How many days we've had in our lives, we wish we could be like a little bird and just take off and get away from the problems. But we look at the hobos riding trains and think, once they scrape together a little bit of food, they have no problems in the world, no responsibilities, nothing like that. And today we're so burdened with responsibilities and cares that we have. But the first lie that we might tell ourselves is that if my circumstances were different, I would be different. Have you ever thought that or seen someone? If this wouldn't have happened to me, I wouldn't be this way. If he wasn't abused as a child, he wouldn't have been a serial killer when he got old, or robbed or stole, whatever. Have you ever said, I wouldn't have lost my temper if so-and-so didn't do such and such to me? Or I would be a happier dove if my parents hadn't done such and such to me. If this lie were true, then we would all be victims of our circumstances. Remember on the Three Stooges, Curly says, I'm a victim of circumstance. But it was always of their own making, the troubles they got into. If we're not responsible, then someone else is. But we're ultimately responsible for many of the things that happen in our lives. I won't say that everything does. I mean, there's a lot of things that happen to us that we had nothing or no way of knowing were going to happen. But they do happen. But we all have the regrets, if only. If only I'd done this, if only I'd done that. And of course, you know what people say, hindsight is 20/20. If we'd have known then what we know now, we might have done it differently. But the outcome may have not been better. People say, if only I had more money. You know, this one probably comes up every time we have to pay the bills. If only I had more money, I wouldn't have to start juggling things and making things work. Do you ever notice, though, that the more your income increases, so do your bills? You ever notice that? There are people out there. I was driving from Gunter to back to Dallas, and there's just this huge house on 289 East. East of the road, and it takes up acres and acres, and his house goes on forever. I don't know who lives there, if it's a musician or a Dallas Cowboy or some very wealthy person obviously lives out there. You know, and I look at that and think, I couldn't even afford the utility bill in that place. You know, the more we get, the more we accumulate stuff. You know, people get a lot of money and they buy a big boat. Well, if you go to Applebee's in McKinney, there's a sign there and it's a definition of a boat. The definition is a hole in the water that you throw money into. And, you know, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with having a boat or anything like that, but it seems the more we get, the more we add on to the burdens we have. And more burdens we have, the more things we got to take care of. We wind up in that situation where we want to be a little burden flyaway because it sometimes just seems like it's too much. Satan wants to deceive you into thinking that your happiness is dependent upon your circumstances. I'd be a happy person if I was rich, but like we talked about several times, there are a lot of people who won the lottery are miserable right now. People who only want to see them to have to beg for money, divorce, all kind of problems, and they're not happy just by having more money. But the truth is that we are not content with our current circumstances. But we would be happy with another circumstance. And you know, that's just not true. It's just not true. Martha Washington, the wife of our first president, wrote, "I am still determined to be cheerful and happy in whatever situation I may be. For I have also learned from experience that the greater part of happiness or misery depends on our dispositions and not our circumstances. We carry the seeds of the one or the other about with us in our minds wherever we go." And that is so true, that happiness depends on our state of mind, and we can either be miserable about something or unhappy about something. I have my own personal say. Life gives us enough sadness and disappointments, but happiness we make for ourselves. Happiness is when we trust God to get us out of those circumstances. Happiness is realizing there are others in worse, dire circumstances than us, and they may need our help. If you want to get out of depression, help someone who's having a bad time. That'll lift your depression. Go on the mission field where people are truly miserable. If you ever get a chance to go one of those week things or summer things and go out and see what people don't have. People in the United States who are below the poverty line, they live pretty good. You know, 60% of them are somewhere around there, own their own homes. Most of them have a car or two. Most of them have a TV or two. Most of them have microwaves and other things. A lot of poor people in this world would love to be poor in America. But our circumstances are our circumstances, and we must be happy with them. We can be happy despite all that comes around us. The Apostle Paul wrote in Philippians 4:11 and 12, which we just read, he learned to be content with whatever he had in life. Whether it was good or bad, if he had a lot of money, he was still happy. If he was broke, he was still happy. If he was in jail, he was still happy. Whatever they were, he was happy because his single-minded purpose in life was to spread the gospel of Christ and to live the life that Christ wanted him to. And that's what made him happy. Today, the riches of the world cannot make us happy. We talked again this morning, just to bring up Christ again, about the misery and about the depression among the rich, and how they live these lives of opulence, and they're seemingly not happy. Or those like the Trumps and the Gates and all those who are trying to gain more and more money and live their life just working towards that almighty dollar. When someday, someone else is going to reap the benefits of that. Not them. Because we must all leave this world. The passage in Philippians tells us that for Paul, he learned to be content. That implies that he didn't learn that overnight. We learn things by teaching, hearing, and we learn things by example. It's the result of a struggle in his life. It's the result of passing through the tough circumstances and learning one of the hardest lessons of life in order to learn, and that is the source of true contentment. So what did he learn? He went to God's classroom, and he learned discipline, and he learned tribulation, and he learned patience. Consider what Paul wrote. I have been on frequent journeys in dangers from rivers, dangers from robbers, dangers from my countrymen, dangers from the Gentiles, dangers in the city, dangers in the wilderness, dangers on the sea, dangers among false brethren. 2 Corinthians 11:26. I paid the electric bill, so I don't know why that out. But anyway, maybe it'll come on soon. One of the problems with a lot of Christians is that they're not content with having their needs met. They're trying to get all their wants met. We talked about that before. You know, do you need it or do you want it? Yeah, I took it off. The light's come on. Baby, you keep flickering. But going on with our lesson, one of the problems a lot of Christians is that they're not content with having just their needs met. They want their wants met. I've never seen electricity do that. They're trying to get their wants met. You can never, ever satisfy your wants. You will always want more. What is driving your life? What is the focus of your life? The hard truth is that circumstances don't make us what we are. They reveal what we are. They reveal those things that we are in our lives. So, see, we can be content without lights, but we'd like to have the lights. Jesus said, the good man out of the good treasure of his heart brings forth what is good, and the evil man out of his evil treasure brings forth what is evil. For his mouth speaks from what fills his heart, Luke 6:46. Trials and tribulations, again, Book of James talks a lot about them. They reveal the heart of the person. They reveal the true nature of that person and what they go through. Anyone can be happy when things are good. Anyone can be happy when things are going their way. But what happens when bad things happen to them? It is a revelation of what our hearts are really like, of the stuff that's in them. But we realize how much we need Jesus to make us holy, and that we are far from attaining the righteousness of God. As God exposes every hidden corner of our lives, we learn to lean upon His righteousness and to reject any belief in our own. The second lie we tell ourselves this morning is that suffering is God's will. Now, there are those out there who would profess that if you follow God, you'll have riches untold and you'll gain money and all kind of great things and have this happy life. But that's not how it's supposed to be. We live in a culture in the West that does everything it can to alleviate any form of pain and suffering. And, you know, people lead their lives like that. Not to say that it's wrong. I mean, there are a lot of good things out there, and it's good to, if you got a toothache or something else, we can do something about it or other bodily pain, but we're trying to rid ourselves of all the suffering that ever existed. And sometimes that's just not possible. We believe that we're telling people what their itching ears want to hear if we're going to tell them something else besides that. Because that's not what the Bible teaches. It teaches that as Christians we go through trials and struggle, both spiritual and physical. This concept is not in the Bible for the itching ears. In fact, the Bible says something completely different. Hebrews 5:8, although he was a son, he learned obedience from what he suffered. So Jesus learned, becoming a man, our sufferings, and understands them. So he learned from what he suffered. we learn from what we suffer in life. And learning is a process. Again, it's hearing, teaching, experiencing. Jesus learned from what he suffered, not only on the cross, but on the life that he led. He led it as the Greek word, a tecton, a hand worker. He was a common, maybe not common, but maybe more of a skilled laborer with stone and wood and other things, and even more common things like picking grain that these people did. They were basically a hand worker. You know, they would tell you that you'll have prosperity, and that's just not so. 1 Peter 2:21, to this you were called, because Christ suffered for you, leaving you an example that you should follow in his steps. Jesus suffered and came through it perfect. Now, we can't be perfect, but we know that when we suffer, Jesus suffered with us. Jesus suffered some of those same things. In 1 Peter 5:10, the God of all grace, who called you to his eternal glory in Christ, after you have suffered for a little while, will himself restore you and make you strong, firm, and steadfast. It is in this passage that I am convinced that God permits us to do some suffering, so that we will learn dependence upon him and not ourselves. When we're rich, when we suffer nothing, when everything is going our way, do you think we think of God? Maybe we do. We're here today, and some have their illnesses, but some are doing okay. And we still think of God, but many out there don't think of God. They don't think of that when things are good. Suffering causes us to reflect upon the good times, to truly know what is good in life, to truly lean on God. True joy is not the absence of pain, but the presence of God in the middle of our pain and trials. 2 Corinthians 12:9, and he said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My strength is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, most gladly, I rather boast in my infirmities than the power of Christ may rest upon it. Paul, a man just like us and had feelings just like us, wanted to be perfect, but he couldn't achieve that. But what did Christ tell him? That is where my power is perfected. That is where my crucifixion needs to be. It needs to be on your mind when you can't be perfect and when you need me. Paul realized then that he can boast in his infirmaries because that is where Christ is. That is where Christ works in our life. That is where Christ makes us whole. We are reminded of this, our first purpose, that we were created for God's pleasure and not our own. We must stop living as the center of our own little universe and worship the one who actually is in the center of the universe and created the universe. Trouble can work for you or against you. There's an old story told of a king in Africa who had a close friend with whom he grew up. The friend had a habit of looking at every situation that occurred in life, whether it be a good thing or a bad thing, and remarking, this is good. One day, the king and his friend were out on a hunting expedition. The friend would load and prepare the guns for the king. It was a long time ago when you had to load through the barrel and you know, put the charge on there, and it was an old rifle, not like the modern ones we have today. So he'd load the guns for his good friend who was a king. The friend had apparently done something wrong in preparing one of the guns. For after taking the gun from his friend, the king fired it, the breech blew, and the king's thumb was blown off. Examining the situation, the friend remarked, as usual, this is good. The king said, no, this is not good, and proceeded to send his own friend to jail. About a year later, the king was hunting in an area he should have known to stay clear of, where cannibals were. And, of course, he was captured by the cannibals. They took him, and they put him on a stake, and they started preparing the pots to cook him up. And all of a sudden, they noticed he didn't have a thumb. Well, their superstition was that they didn't eat anyone who wasn't perfect. So he was blemished, so to speak, so they let him go. He went back and immediately went to his friend and went to jail to speak with him and said, "You were right." He said, "It was good that my thumb was blown off." And he proceeded to tell the friend all that had happened to him. "And I am so sorry for sending you to jail for so long," he said. "It was bad for me to do this." "No," said his friend, "this is good." So the king says, "What do you mean? This is good. How could it be good for me to send you to jail for a year?" His friend replied, "If I had not been in jail, I would have been with you." And of course, being whole, he would have been a meal for them. In Romans 8:28-29, "And we know that God causes all things to work together for good for those who love the Lord, and to those who are called according to his purpose. For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to become conformed to the image of his Son, so that he would be the firstborn among many brethren." God has one purpose in your life, and it isn't to make our lives easy, cushy, comfortable, or happy. His singular purpose is to reproduce the character of Christ in us and to glorify himself and to bring us to salvation. Every problem has a character-building opportunity for God's hand in your life. You know, it's kind of funny. As we work in business and stuff like that, and people say, "Oh, we have a problem." Then people start to say, "Oh, we don't have a problem. We have an opportunity." Kind of in a joking way. But there are opportunities to lift up our hearts, lift up our spirits, and walk a little closer to God. We can use those things to bring us just a little bit closer to him. You know, tribulation, the word that he uses in there, means to press together, to squeeze together. And everyone's heard of the famous samurai swords. Even heard stories of Japanese in battle slicing gun barrels with these swords. But you know, they were made by the finest sword makers. And they were made by pressing together layers of soft metal and hard metal. Hard metal is very, very brittle, and you don't want your sword to break. But if it's too soft, it cannot do its job. And they would press together 3,000 layers, very thin layers, of this metal together to create a weave of these metals so that the sword would be both very hard and sharp, but at the same time have the flexibility not to break under that tension. And being pressed together, the word Greek word used there in tribulation, means to be made whole, means to be made strong. Strong enough to stand up to God's, to the trials of life, but soft enough to realize that we need to bend underneath them and let God work through them. When's the last time you boasted about your trials and tribulations? I'll be honest and say I can't even remember a time that I was very thankful for going through them. I was very thankful when they were over. But when they were over, I realized how much closer I was to God, how much stronger it made me feel that I had went through them. A silversmith was once asked, "How do you know when the silver you're smelting is pure enough to work with?" He replied, "When I can see my reflection in it." Can God see his reflection in you and me today? Can people see it in us today? When you have been refined by the trials and tribulations of life, what is inside you is purified. How to have victory in any circumstance? Stay focused on God's plan and not your pain or your plan. Let us also lay aside every encumbrance and sin which so easily entangles us, and let us run that race that's been set before us. Fixing our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, despising the shame as he sat down in the right hand of the Father. For consider him who has endured such hostility by sinners against himself, so that you may not grow weary and lose heart in the goals ahead of us. These are the things that you and I have to go through in order to be made more perfect. A girl who suffered the loss of her family was imprisoned in a Nazi concentration camp. If you look at the world, you will be distressed, she said. If you look within you, you'll be depressed. But if you look to God, look to Christ, you will be at rest. Too often we look inward and we feel sad. Too often we look at the world and we see so many terrible things. But if we look to Christ, look beyond all that and look to Christ, we'll truly be at rest, knowing that He takes care of anything. One day a farmer's donkey fell into a well. The animal cried piteously for hours as the farmer tried to figure out what to do. Finally, he decided the animal was old and the well needed to be covered up anyway. It wasn't just worth retrieving the donkey. He invited all his neighbors to come over and help him. They all grabbed a shovel and began to shovel dirt into the well. At first, the donkey realized what was happening and cried out even louder. Then, to everyone's amazement, the donkey quieted down. A few shovel loads later, the farmer finally looked down the well and was astonished at what he saw. With every shovel, dirt that hit that donkey's back, he would do something amazing. He would step up on that dirt they put in there. And as the farmer's neighbors continued to put dirt into the well, the donkey kept stepping up until he stepped out and trotted off. You know, life is going to shovel dirt on you, all kinds of dirt, terrible things. The trick to getting out of the well, getting out of that pit, is to shake it off and take a step up. Each of our troubles is a stepping stone closer to God. We can get out of the deepest wells not just by stopping and giving up, by not stopping and not giving up. So shake it off and take a step up. That's what God wants us to do. How have you been handling the troubles of life? Have you been shaking your fist at God? Has life been tossing you some tough pitches out there? Have you been learning the secrets of contentment? I invite you to take these trials and tribulations, just as we've been told from the Scripture, and do like that donkey. Take a step up. Each pile of dirt that hits us on our back, take a step up. Look to God and walk up and on out of that pit. Because if we have faith that God will take care of us, that God will meet us in the end, even if the end is our ultimate end, that He will be there for us. He will take us through every trial and tribulation, and they will make us stronger, they will make us closer to God, and they'll help us reach our goal, which is salvation. I don't know what your condition is this morning, but if you have need, won't you come as we stand and sing the song of invitation?